From KUOW in Seattle, this is Primed. I'm Carolyn Adolph.
And I'm Joshua McNichols.
In this season of Primed, we've been looking at how Amazon is changing everyday life. And one big change we're seeing is that big tech companies are getting into the business of healthcare. Amazon, Google, and Apple are all finding ways to gather our health information and render it useful, usually by applying artificial intelligence.
And healthcare is a trillion-dollar industry in the U.S., so there's money to be made. But will the arrival of AI actually improve our health? Dr. Eric Topol is a cardiologist whose book Deep Medicine looks at answers to that question. And he argues that more AI in medicine might help us all be more human. Here's our interview.
You tell an amazing story in your book in which you get to see what's wrong from the patient perspective and from the professional perspective. Can you tell us that story about your knee surgery?
Sure. The experience was, over 3 years ago. I had to undergo a total knee replacement from a congenital rare condition that I had had surgery as a teenager. When I had the surgery, I also was told that I should do very well, and chance of only serious complication of infection is 1%. And I didn't do well. I actually was tortured to a point where, opiates couldn't mitigate the pain. I couldn't sleep. I was having, frequent crying spells, and I showed up to the orthopedist, the post-op appointment, and a month after what was a technically good surgery, but I had a purple knee and leg was, intensely swollen and had very limited range of motion despite going to physical therapy frequently. So my orthopedist said, you need to see your internist to get some antidepressant medications.
Tell me about what that was like for you to hear.
Well, my wife was with me and we looked at each other. It's like, what? Are you kidding me? And, essentially, this is about the lack of time. Orthopedist was seeing, 30 patients over the course of an hour or two, just dropped in for a minute, barely did any exam. And that was the easiest way out. No empathy, robotic, interestingly.
Interestingly.
And so I think, that's medicine today. That is basically patients are shortchanged. And in defense of the doctor here, he didn't have the time because he's expected to see so many patients and do so many operations. And so it's just a reflex. So I can't deal with this. So, go see somebody else and get some medications to fix it, because that's a lot easier than talking to somebody and expressing empathy, right? So, this lack of care. So this term healthcare is off base. We don't really have care. It's rare, actually, to have doctors providing true care, even though they want to, because they're squeezed to the hilt.
What would care have looked like in that situation?
Well, it would have been spending time to understand, what really is wrong. You're not crying and not sleeping because you're depressed. What is wrong? And maybe the fact that, you start to really drill into the situation is that each time you go for physical therapy, you're actually getting worse. And this aggressive range of motion activity is making you worse. So maybe we should come up with a new plan. All that could have come out of spending time and showing care. In addition, having the time to review my record to show me that I was at risk for this complication, which had never been mentioned, not enough time to tee up the data before the surgery or after. There's just too much data for each human being for any doctor to really have a full presence and awareness of every part of that medical essence of each patient.
So in this instant, you saw it from the patient point of view, but were able to have this clarity because you're also a physician yourself. It seems to have sent you on a journey to look at what solutions could be out there. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Right. Well, you know, I've been a practicing cardiologist, since 1985, so that's, 34 years or so. And I've watched the degradation of time and care throughout that period of time. And I think this is because, medicine has turned into a big business. So over 3 years ago, even before the knee surgery, I had become especially interested in artificial intelligence and whether it would have any remedies or any improvements of healthcare and medicine. So I had been researching it. And I saw that it could improve the accuracy, which is something that we don't fess up about, that there's so many medical errors and there's so little time and there's so much waste and unnecessary things that happen, every day in medicine. So I was actually intrigued to get up to speed with AI, but I didn't realize the connection it could make to bring back the care in healthcare. Really, until I had this experience and started to see the light, that's the most far-reaching objective that we should be looking for.
That's so interesting. So one of the things that has come up as a theme in our research this season has been that people worry that we will lose something essentially human, that we will really miss by using artificial intelligence. What do you think is wrong with that thinking?
Well, I know it's counterintuitive to think that AI could make medicine more human and humane. But in fact, it's been degraded so much that it actually is desperate for improvement. And there really is that potential. But even though there are people that would doubt that, it's our best shot. And the reason being is that machines are just going to keep getting better. And that's why the things that make us human can be augmented, that is, more humanity, and for all of us to embrace our qualities. And that's communication and empathy and compassion and all the things that the essence of medicine, which we largely are missing out from today because we don't have enough time. So AI does give us that opportunity to get the gift of time.
One thing we've learned in researching this season is that there are certain kinds of things that AI is good at helping diagnose and certain kinds of things that it cannot diagnose.
Oh, yeah.
For example, you might distinguish between the ease of which you could diagnose, a flu, as opposed to the difficulty of diagnosing something like, chronic pain and its origination.
Right. Well, there's kind of three categories of AI in medicine. The one where the most established advance is in images. So whether that's, scans like X-rays and CAT scans or slides for pathology or electrocardiograms or, the skin lesions and rashes. That's where AI has been shown to be remarkable because it picks up things that doctors don't see. It's actually quite extraordinary. And that's because, at the pixel level, it's able to process that data and a human just can't do it. It can't see everything. So that's where AI excels, and that is where it could save a lot of time. The second area where AI has lots of potential, of course, is in voice and speech. And there, that would eliminate keyboards, which is the common enemy of both patients and doctors. This is a big part of the burnout of clinicians because they weren't going through all this training and wanting to care for patients to be relegated to being data clerks. And so the patient, of course, is missing eye contact and lack of bond with a doctor or a nurse because they're typing at a keyboard. So voice could do that, and we're seeing really good evidence. It's not as far along as images, but it's getting there. And then the third category is predicting things, whether that's a diagnosis or whether that's an outcome. That's the softest of the three areas in medicine. But, you know, that's a work in progress as well. So, you know, it just depends on which area you're trying to use. To each of them provides a gift of time. Each of them promotes accuracy, improved efficiency, workflow, potentially lower cost. And each ultimately could promote the humanity in medicine, you know, improving it in the bond, the presence between a doctor and a patient.
I'm just trying to imagine why, as the industry tries to go forward, we're not just going to see, oh, you can do it faster,
right,
with less human contact. Therefore, doctors just get pushed even further out of the equation, right? Because you'll have healthcare systems competing against each other, and the ones that dispense with doctors might be the most profitable.
Right. Well, that's the story of medicine for the last four decades, which is the progressive squeeze to doctors and nurses and all clinicians to do more in less unit time, which has gotten us into this mess. We have the worst physician burnout, suicides, depression ever in the history of the profession. So something has to give, and that squeeze has got to be addressed. And, you know, that's my great hope, is that we will take it on, and it's going to require activism among physicians, and that hasn't necessarily been historically a quality, a behavior that we've seen, but it's starting to happen. And, you know, I think that's the only chance we have. It's our best shot. We may not have another opportunity like this for generations. We have to take it.
There's so many institutional barriers to success. What would have to intervene to disrupt the system deeply enough to have it become more caring-centered and more patient success-centered?
Right. Well, you know, you're getting at kind of the two ends of what's wrong in American healthcare. On the one hand, you know, the lack of access to a significant proportion of people, and in the other, the overuse of procedures, medications. And the problem with the latter is that often that's done to save time rather than spending time with a patient to understand things, like the example I gave. I'll just order more tests, more scans, more medicines. And so if you have time and you have machine support, that's a big decompression. And then you can spend that time, which is what's so critical, is to establish that trust and presence and relationship, which has been so severely undercut. Now, the other part of the story is giving more autonomy to patients so that they can use their devices to generate data and algorithms to help interpret it. And so most of the things that are common, that are not serious, like a skin rash, an ear infection of a child, I mean, so many things that are common problems that are not requiring a doctor. A urinary tract infection now can be diagnosed through AI. So these things could prevent even any doctor involvement, and that further leads to decompression. And so out of all this, that is the outsourcing to machines, the use of more autonomy for patients, there's this thing about having more time for important encounters. That's what we desperately need. And if we had that, I think it's pretty clear, we'd see a whole lot less burnout. We'd see a whole lot more sense in patients that they are being looked after, that they are getting the true care, the deep empathy that we all want and crave.
I'd love to ask you a question about Amazon, because you know they've made investments in healthcare. They bring the data management tools to bring about some of these changes that you've described, yet they are also known to be a great disruptive power in the markets where they operate, and you know aren't necessarily always known for giving back time, to the parties involved. So I'd love to understand where Amazon as a company with data management tools, but also with great power in marketplaces, could play a role, what that role would look like.
Well, you know, they are kind of emblematic, Amazon as a company, to the story of AI, which is a two-edged sword. It's extraordinarily powerful, and that can be used for good or for not necessarily nefarious, but not good. And so, you know, one of the things that's distinct about Amazon is it connects with its customers. So unlike other tech companies that doesn't have that direct connection with consumers at scale, they clearly do. And the question is their priority going to be to help consumers achieve a better patient-doctor relationship? Or is it going to be to improve their revenue and their enterprise? And that is a looming question. What is their priority? I don't think they know that yet. And some point in the future, we'll find out. But they're a unique tech titan because they have deep connects across such a large proportion of United States households. And it isn't clear, you know, for example, their smart speaker could be used as a way for people to have guidance, the virtual health assistant. That isn't being pursued yet, but, you know, ultimately that's one of the ways that patients will have more charge, more relative autonomy, and that will be used more and more for common, non-serious medical conditions.
What do you think? You talked about a virtual health assistant. I'm wondering what that might look like, how you might see that functioning in our lives in the future in a positive way or a negative way.
Yeah, no, it's already starting to happen, like, for example, in diabetes, where, you know, the algorithm that's only in existence so far has been, you know, is your glucose going up or down? That's a dumb algorithm. But now we're seeing the integration of all of a person's relevant data, you know, everything they eat, and the timing of that, sleep, stress levels, and the glucose sensor and, you know, the gut microbiome and all these things are integrated in an algorithm to provide guidance to prevent high blood sugars or very low blood sugars. So if you see that happening in diabetes, it doesn't take much of a stretch to see it across all conditions ultimately, and not just to manage conditions that for the sake of diabetes, but to prevent them. So eventually we're going to see prevention of asthma in people at risk before they ever have an attack, or prevention of seizures, or prevention of heart failure, all sorts of things that we haven't had the power to prevent. Because it means getting all this data continuously, analyzing it, providing guidance back to the person so they can prevent the event or the condition from occurring. So that's where we're headed. That's going to take a while, but we're seeing the seeds of that right now.
So one of the things that we've encountered as we work is that, you know, we've discovered that people frequently get creeped out by contact with AIs, and it makes them worry. You know, having seen 2001, A Space Odyssey, they wonder about, as these incredible fast-learning AIs develop, you know, can they start to develop agency? Can they start to, you know, basically there's a world of nightmares out there for the taking. And so I wanted to ask you, what can an AI never do that only the doctor can do?
Right. Well, that's what doctoring will be, I hope, which is all the human qualities. That's true understanding, context, the true sense of a human bond, but also things like laughter and crying and joking and, you know, all the things that we do as humans, which would make us better doctors and promote far deeper relationships with patients. That's where we need to get back to. We used to have that. You know, when I was in medical school in the 70s, that was the norm. There were still house calls being done then. And then it all slipped away. But, you know, we can get back there. And that means getting human again. And we'll have a way to do it if we go after it.
You know, there's also experience, though.
Well, you're bringing up a critical point, which is there's not going to be any important diagnoses made without a doctor human oversight, because algorithms could be wrong. They could have malware. They could have other glitches that make them sick. You don't want to ever put your life on the line or, you know, a serious diagnosis without that wisdom and experience that you're referring to. So they're there to help, these deep learning algorithms, AI, but not to take the place of oversight. And so we still are going to value to the maximum that expertise, that wisdom that we want to see in doctors. That will never go away.
You know the system from the inside and also from the outside as a patient as well as a doctor. And I wonder, what do you think, when you look at the disruption that would be necessary in order for us to use AI for what AI is best at, so that we can use doctors for what doctors are best at, would that disruption have to come from inside the walls of these institutions, or would it be more likely to come from the outside, from a corporation like Amazon?
Well, right. I mean, it's two fronts here. The innovation needs to come from the outside, largely. Innovation has not done well with, you know, the incumbents and the health systems we have today. So tech titans like Amazon and Microsoft and Google and others, you know, they're going to be definitely, and startups, of course, are going to be part of this. But what the revolution that has to take place in order for this to go in the right direction is by doctors. So we have a problem now where medicine has become big business and doctors have been passive, saying, you know, head down and not standing up for patients. And so we are going to see an organization formed, hopefully getting all doctors in it, or as close to all, which is 1 million doctors in the United States. And, you know, that is probably going to be the mechanism from within that we see this AI ultimately being used to help the doctor-patient relationship, which has suffered so greatly as medicine and healthcare became such a big business in this country.
Thank you so much, Dr. Topol. This has been wonderful.
Oh, I enjoyed talking with y'all. I look forward to seeing what you put together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Eric Topol's book is called Deep Medicine: How Artificial Intelligence Can Make Healthcare Human Again. Next time on Primed, we're tracking your package far past your delivery, and it's going to get smelly. Primed is a production of KUOW Public Radio in Seattle. It's hosted by me, Carolyn Adolph.
And me, Joshua McNichols. Our producer is Alec Cowan. Our editor is Carol Smith. Our executives are Jill Jackson and Brendan Sweeney.
Music this week by Raymond Scott. You can find links on our website.
And here's a shout out to all the people who've left reviews in their favorite podcast apps for Primed. We're starting to get some traction with this podcast, and you are a big reason why. If you have thoughts about this podcast, please write a review. It really helps.
And thanks for listening.